Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
This 45 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and it's going to be a violent day because we got Mr. Joe Goldberg here.
You and your violence. Yeah. I'm a nice guy. I pet the seals.
You're a nice guy on the surface, but those are always the serial killers in the story.
That's true. That's right. But I let the violence, whatever little violence I had, come out in the Spy Devil's books so that they can blow things up in Mozambique somebody. Yeah.
So you say. I know every town you go to after you leave, there's always problems. So.
Well, we were just talking to Robert about pen names. I can say, well, I kill under pen names. I go under Alan is my killer name.
Yeah, that's a good killer name. No, that's too passive. That's not a good, strong name.
Could do Robert.
Robert's better.
I can do Bob like they did.
I like
that.
Bob.
Good piece. You know, Bob. He was the bad guy. He was the spirit.
What we need here is some strong coffee. So we've got, speaking of strong coffee, we've got a man here that's written actually quite a few books. He's been in the business. And he's a pro. He's here to show us how to do this because we're still trying, right? So we've got The Killing Room, and it's part of The Killing Room series, and it's book one, and I know book two is coming out, I believe, this fall or August, something like that. We'll talk to him. So Mr. Robert Swartwood, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So what is The Killing Room?
So The Killing Room is it's definitely a thriller. I can say that. The tough part about this book, well, I can tell you the setup, but we can't really go much farther just because without giving away major spoilers, which has kind of been difficult to help talk about it and promote it. But it's basically about a guy who is down on his luck, had a recent divorce, so he decides to get away for a while. He goes out to Las Vegas, and while he's there, he meets a woman at a club. Next thing he knows, he wakes up in a motel room that's not his, and the woman is dead in the tub, in the bathroom. And he panics, and ouch, he takes off. And pretty soon, a pair of detectives basically capture him. And that's kind of where the story really takes off. I mean, first page, it takes off with him waking up in the hotel room, or the motel room, not knowing where he is. But again, that's just the setup. And what I always like in terms of writing and also in terms of just being a reader of these types of books is you don't always know where the book is going. Sometimes you know by the first page or the first chapter, okay, this is the type of book it's going to be. You know, it's going to be a historical thriller. It's going to be some type of action thriller. And that's fun. I've written books like that myself. But I also like writing the books that I lead you one way. And then probably page 50, page 80, page 100, all of a sudden there's a reveal, there's a twist, and then the book becomes a completely different thing. And so that's what we have here with The Killing Room. So there is a major reveal somewhat early on, so it's very difficult to really kind of go into more details without giving away a major spoiler.
So do you have this sort of planned out or set up? Because you say it leads you one way, and then it all of a sudden you're going somewhere different, or something else happens and it changes things. Do you already know, like, do you have that planned out at the beginning? You kind of know this is where you want to be, but you're going to take people on that, I guess, false road, so to speak, on purpose?
With this book, absolutely. Especially now, I've gotten to a place where time is very precious, and there's only so many minutes in a day. So if I'm going to be working on a new project, I often will bounce it off my agent. I will have discussions and basically determining whether or not this is something that's going to be viable. Because in the past, especially, when I was a younger buck, not really, worrying too much, where I was maybe still in college or just out of college, still living at home, I could just sit down and just start writing. And in fact, I had done that with one book. My first draft, I wrote like 90,000 words in 3 weeks because I was just nonstop. And that was one where I just started on chapter one, having no idea where I was going, and just let the story go. And fortunately, it worked out. I mean, granted, it wasn't perfect from that first draft. The first draft is never perfect. But nowadays, I just can't afford to just sit down and kind of let the words go where they may. I really have to at least have – I don't outline. In fact, I think I heard – I was listening to the interview that Joe had done somewhat recently or a while back, where he called himself a planter, which I think is a good term, because I don't really
– Planter.
I'm not one to outline. However, there are times where I might have to – in my head, the story is all there. The characters are there. But usually if I'm talking to my agent or something, like, they need more details than just giving me, like – than just giving, like, two or three lines. So usually I have to kind of get that set up where I kind of want to go. But that doesn't always mean that the story is obviously going to go in that direction. Last year, I sold a project to Audible for an Audible original under a pen name I did. And to do that, we had to be very, we had to present an outline. And we had pitched it as a 30,000-word novella. So a couple chapters, an outline, a very detailed outline. And then when we sold it, I sat down to actually start writing it. And I realized, crap, the only way to make this effective was I was going to have to add in a lot of other stuff. Basically, we were going to have to get another point of view to really make the story work. And so I remember asking my editor, how long is too long? Because we were contracted, to just do around 30. And she said, nothing over 70. I said, okay, perfect, because the book ended up becoming a little over 60. So I wrote double than what we were contracted for. And granted, if you look at the outline that I had done, everything is there, but adding in the extra point of view, it just added more to the suspense, added more to the overall book to really make it work. So it was one of those things where I really don't like the outline, because oftentimes I don't stick with it. I sometimes feel that it's restrictive, but sometimes it's also nice kind of having it as a guide. But yeah, if I can, I like to just sit down and just, go.
How do you create these characters? How does your main character come to you?
So oftentimes I will have either it's a character, maybe just a setting, a story idea. Oftentimes you see things on social media and the news. Like, I remember one time seeing a push alert came through from the Times for something, and I immediately clicked on it and thought, oh, this would make a really great story idea. And so oftentimes I'm not one to write down ideas. I mean, I will if I'm pitching them to my agent and whatever else, but oftentimes I try to let them kind of sit in my head, a little simmer a little bit, percolate. And I always feel that the ideas that I have, or the characters, the settings, the ones that stick with me, for years. I mean, there are ideas that I have in my head that I've, probably been over a decade, that I still have, just like almost like the entire book. I can still just think about it and know exactly, like, beat for beat how I would want to do it. I just don't have the time to sit down and do it. But I know at the same time that if it's stuck with me this long, it's probably an idea worth writing at some point. Whereas, you know, you might come up with a story idea or a setting or a character, and you might forget about it the next week. And I always kind of feel like that's almost like my subconscious is kind of doing that, I don't know, kind of like that marketing testing on my, you know, for me. It's basically saying if something's worth it or not.
So what's a good book to you? What makes a good book, or what would keep you reading in a book?
Ah, that's a very good question. It's a difficult question because I do try to read in a lot of different genres. Obviously, I primarily write thrillers, crime, action, even psychological suspense, but I do try to read, you know, literary stuff. I've even gotten back into trying to read some poetry, just because for the overall descriptive nature, you know, I'm probably more plot focused. So, and, you know, I'm not one to really go with my right. I don't want to say flowery, but I like to think, you know what I mean, in terms of, you know, sometimes you read certain books and just the author paints you just like they put you in the scene just with a few words. And that's what I always think is the challenge, where you don't want to write too much. But at the same time, you don't want to write too little. So it's always finding that balance of showing you a setting, showing you the action, but we're not going too much, where you always then get to that place where the reader starts to skim. And I know that personally, like I will pick up books where I will get into a good chapter or two or three. And then at a certain point, if I feel like I really want to finish this book, I'll just start skimming it. Whereas other books, for whatever reason, I don't know, just the writing or the descriptive nature or something about it, I want to take my time with it. I could probably breeze right through it, but I will find myself maybe putting it down because I don't want it to end. And that's, I don't want to say it happens all the time. It is rare for that to happen, but what specifically is the thing? It's always difficult. It's probably different for you and for Joe. What captures you? Probably each of you probably have your all-time favorite book. I'm sure I do too. Although off the top of my head, I can't even think of what my all-time favorite book would be. But and that's the beautiful part about it, just everybody. Everyone's different. Everyone has different things that really stick out to them.
Yeah.
Well, I got a lot of questions. Let me ask one. Yeah, I know. But well, let me go back to Al's question about characters. Do you have the ideas first, or do you have a character first and say, I need to put this person in a situation, or do you have the situation and say, okay, let me put some people in this crazy situation? Which comes first?
I would have to say it varies project by project. In terms of The Killing Room, for me, it was the idea of just a businessman waking up, somewhere that is unfamiliar with him, and then finding somebody dead in the next room. Now, I will say I'd had this idea a long time ago, and this was before Christopher, the last name escaping me, but he wrote The Flight Attendant. And I remember when The Flight Attendant came out, thinking, okay, crap. All right, there goes my idea, because his idea is about this flight attendant who is in another country. She goes out with this guy, wakes up, and he's dead. And sometimes, you know, with books and writing, it is often who gets there first. But then I actually read the book, and it was completely different. Besides that setup in the very first chapter is completely different direction. And so I felt pretty confident that I could continue with what I did. But oftentimes I have that set piece, that idea of where I want to go with it. And then, The Killing Room takes place in Las Vegas. Now, I knew the setup was going to be him waking up in this motel and, again, finding a dead woman in the bathtub. Initially, I thought maybe I could set this in some, like, Caribbean, some Caribbean paradise place. Maybe in the Bermuda or something like that. Had I done that, there would definitely have been certain aspects of the story that probably would have stayed the same, but it also would have been a completely different story, because I set this one, The Killing Room is set in Vegas. And so I was able to really use that setting, because then you find out again, after we get to certain reveals and the book goes on, the character was able to go different places where he would not have been able to do had it been set on some remote island. So it definitely lucked out, at least in that respect.
Is setting important to you? Is it a character?
Sometimes I think setting, yes and no. I mean, setting, I think, should be just as important as the characters. Obviously, you will set your story, or at least for me, I will set my story in a certain place because it has to be set in that place. There are times where you might read, like a murder mystery. And the murder mystery could take place in New York City, could take place in Baltimore, could take place in Los Angeles. Ultimately, probably the overall story is not going to change. And that does happen. Some books will have that happen, and that's fine. But I have found, at least for me, if I set it in like Baltimore, I will use Baltimore. Or I will use certain aspects, like even the follow-up to The Killing Room. Much of that takes place in Washington, D.C. So I used Washington, D.C. and the surrounding areas to my advantage. So it really did play in. It became just as important as the characters. Now, granted, sometimes you do have a setting which, for whatever reason, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, is like, what's a book that has a really, you know, huge setting that basically the book would not take place, you know, the book would not work if it was not set in that region or that city or wherever else. And of course, I'm completely blanking right now. Which one?
Anything on a ship.
There you go. But, I mean, oftentimes I think, and I don't know, maybe it sounds a little corny because we get into like writing workshops here, but, you know, characters are the main thing. They're the main driving force. Without a character who has purpose, you know, I don't think you have a very effective story. So if you don't have those strong characters, or at least those interesting characters, and that's another thing too. Sometimes you always get people who will say, oh, this character is not very interesting, or this character is not very likable. I don't think characters have to be likable. I've never understood that, this idea that characters have to be likable. I just feel that you have to at least understand where those characters are coming from. I mean, think about it too. A lot of villains are very, a lot of people remember villains. A lot of people like villains. I mean, think about, everyone, have you guys either read, Watchmen or seen the movie? I mean, people love Rorschach, but Rorschach is an awful human being, but for whatever reason, he has this like cult following, which is funny, is when they did the TV, spinoff, Rorschach kind of had this like cult following, which was not some great people, basically were, using him as a role model. But regardless, he's not a good guy. And yet for whatever reason, people love him. And so, and that's the same idea. I mean, again, he's not likable, but so I never really feel like you need to have likable characters. I just feel like you need to have characters that again, have a purpose. That, and you don't necessarily even have to relate to them. I mean, I don't think people are not relating to, you know, to serial killers. They're not relating to Hannibal Lecter, but at least they understand.
That's on. I say Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, but at least they understand. They understand, I guess, in a way, his purpose, like what his motivation is. Not, and hopefully they don't agree with it. But at the same time, you know, he's not just this, you know, the stick figure on a page.
But why do you pick certain characters, or do you think about it like that? You say the businessman here wakes up in a strange hotel with, you know, with the woman's dead in his bathtub. Like, that's an unusual setting. Where does that come from for you? Are you thinking businessman, why couldn't it be a cop, or why couldn't it be a doctor? Like, is there a particular method to your madness in how you do this? Or did you wake up in a hotel with a dead woman in your tub?
Not that I remember. But of course, I probably would have if I got knocked out. I would say, at least in this instance, again, it's very difficult to read about this book without giving too much away. But there is a reason why he was a businessman. In fact, I think initially I had his occupation a little bit different. But then it becomes one of these things. And that's one of those things that I always think about, especially when I'm writing books. I don't know how it is for either of you guys, but I'm constantly asking why. Like, why is this character acting the way he's acting? Why, you know, why is he making these decisions? Again, why is he this, why does he have this occupation? And I always feel like if I can continue as the author answering that question, that's good. And it doesn't always necessarily have to be, you know, the answer does not necessarily always have to be on the page. But if you get to a place where you might say, you know, why is this character still running? Why is he not, you know, Why is he not calling the police? Why is he not doing this or this? And if there's no valid answer, and then the answer is just, well, you know, I want to write a 300-word or a 300-page book, but I'm only about 150 pages in, so I have to keep the book going. Like that, I don't think that's a valid answer. You know, the answer should just always be what is best for the story. And so, again, going back to that idea of being a planter, you know, I oftentimes have. Have you guys ever heard of? I think Harlan Coben had said that with him, it's like he's taking a cross country trip. He knows where he's starting. He has an idea where he's going to end up. He's, you know, he's going to start in Jersey. He's going to go to California. He has a general idea of the route he's going to take, but of course, he doesn't know what's going to happen along the way. He doesn't know who he's going to meet. He doesn't know if there's going to be detours or anything along those lines. So. And oftentimes, you know, when he gets to California, he might end up actually in a different place. You know, he might end up close to where he thought he was going to go. So oftentimes that's kind of how it happens with me. I might have that idea or these characters, but then things change halfway through, which I always love. I always love as a writer, if I'm surprised by what the characters do, by where the story goes, then fingers crossed, readers will be doubly surprised. Of course, then you're always going to have some readers who'd be like, oh, I saw this coming a mile away. It's like, how? I didn't even see it coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you look back at this, like you've gone through this book and now you've got, you're obviously working on book two or maybe even done. When you're going through this whole period of time and you're working through the characters and the changes and stuff like that, does it lead your life? Like how does that, does it change your life in some ways?
I mean, I often get less sleep, especially when I'm down in it. I mean, actually I am working on copy edits right now for book two. They are due, you know, shortly. And I do find myself, just, you know, kind of chugging some Red Bulls whenever I can, because I don't drink coffee and probably Red Bulls aren't good for me either, but I need just some type of caffeine because they are long nights. Now, do the characters stick with me? Yes and no. I mean, sometimes again, I will have characters who will stay with me, but sometimes they don't like just nag at me entirely. But they are just always there in the back of my head. So if I ever, you know, do have that time to sit down, then it is like I never left them. And in fact, even with The Killing Room, I mean, I initially wrote that as a standalone. Because I have written some series in the past. I know, Joe, you have a series. Like, I like series, but at the same time, I like standalones just because I like doing brand new characters, a brand new story. But sometimes with a series, you kind of get stuck in it. You get the readers who really like it, which is great, but at the same time, you just kind of always, I always feel like the pressure just starts building because there was the expectation to go up book by book by book. But in this one, as I was writing it, I realized, okay, there's more for this main character to do. There's more to his story. And so that's what it led into, to the second book.
Well, you've kind of led into my questions because I know exactly what you're doing on the saying about the series thing. And my next book is not in the series. It may be a standalone. Maybe it would be exactly like yours. And someone will say, oh, we should have another book like this, Getting Away from the Espionage, which everybody knows I ask questions that only help me out. So let me ask the question on, you've written a lot of different styles, okay, novellas, and you mentioned historical thrillers, whatever. How do you do that? I mean, how do you flip styles short, long? What do you like about those? And sort of kind of like why? Because I'm kind of known in my little box. I kind of build my box. And I'm hoping it's the right thing to do. So why so many types?
The short answer is I have no idea. I just like writing in general. And a lot of my early stuff has been self-published because I've been doing this for a long time. I mean, in middle school was when I read my very first Stephen King novel, and I knew that I was like, that's what I want to do with my life. I want to be a writer. So I mean, in middle school that became my goal to do. So I think I wrote my first novel when I was, and because of Stephen King, a lot of my earlier stuff was more horror, supernatural. So like my first couple books were more horror, supernatural, But I always kind of leaned more towards thriller, towards crime, towards action. But at the same time, I do enjoy literary stuff. So there are times where, I mean, I had written one novel, which was probably my only quote unquote literary novel. But that even has a few maybe crime. Sometimes it just comes down to marketing. I mean, look at a book like No Country for Old Men by Cormac McCarthy. That is a straight up crime novel. But it's marketed as literary because of the author. So sometimes that happens too. And what I found that is that really, really annoying part is, especially when you're dealing with publishing, they want to put you into categories. And that's why, and again, that's why I do write under a pen name. I write action crime thrillers under my name, and then I'll do these psychological suspense under a pen name, which quite honestly, you think about it, they're all the same types of books. They're all essentially thrillers. But again, publishers like to, you know, categorize things differently, which that's how the business is. But for me, I just like writing what I like to write. It's I don't like to be stuck in that box. I mean, there are some things even I have one idea I'd love to do, which is even more sci-fi.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The question is, if and when I ever do that, is that something that I would want to put out under, you know, my name or come up with another pen name, just because, again, in terms of marketing, you know, I think my readership might enjoy it, but, you know, other readerships coming in might be like, well, this guy's only written thrillers. He doesn't know anything about sci-fi. I mean, again, it becomes that whole thing. I mean, and that's why we have a lot of writers. I mean, I was even thinking about Michael Crichton. I mean, he wrote under, three, four, I don't even know how many pen names before, you know, he became, you know, quote unquote, Michael Crichton. And you have a lot of authors who have done the same thing just over the years for one reason or another. They've had to utilize pen names for, especially when it comes to a different genres.
Right. Go to Bob Goldberg.
Yeah. I'll change it to Bob. B. Goldberg, so I'll be gender neutral. Well, actually, it's something some of my friends write under pen names. I never even considered it because my ego's too huge. But
so this is what I've
the more you talk,
yeah, Joe. This is how I've always justified it. In the end, the check is always in my name.
Yeah,
and that's all that really matters.
Do you get checks? What's that like?
Yeah. That's funny. So what's your writing process like? When you sit down, can you turn it on? just go 9 to 5 and write and go at her? Or do you have to be in a certain mood or in a certain place or a certain atmosphere?
Yes and no. And the reason I say that is that, well, you guys are writers, you know, and I think any writer out there knows that writing is not easy. Like, it's awful. I don't know. It's one of those things, like, I don't know why we do it. I never trusted anybody who says that, oh, I love writing. Where it's like, I love to have written. I don't necessarily love writing because it's tough. I mean, it is hard. It takes a lot out of you. There are times where I just, you know, I love to procrastinate. So I will just keep putting it off. And my wife will say, like, why aren't you writing right now? You know, why are you just sitting here in the living room watching TV or playing on your iPad? And it's just because it takes a lot of work, or like I will tell myself, oh, you know what, I'm not feeling it. And again, I think, you know, I hate to keep going back to Harlan Coben, but I do because he always says really smart stuff. And I think he said that, you know, readers can never tell on the page when a writer is having a bad writing day or a good writing day when they wrote that page. Mostly because I think it's very important. And one of those things that I've really learned over the years to accept and always should try to remind myself is that first drafts are going to suck. No matter how much you try to spend time and make it as good as possible. So for me, I've been doing more of the Nora Roberts vomit draft, you know, theory.
Yeah, I call it barf.
Well, yeah, I just sit down and I just knock out a first draft as soon as possible. And again, that's also a way for me to just kind of let the story and the characters kind of go on their own, where I'm not, and that means that I'm not sitting down and rereading or re-editing. And I know some readers, and that's the thing too. I think a lot of writers, you know, they all have their own process. I don't think there's one right way to write or edit. Is really whatever you find that works best for you. I mean, I do think if you're, you know, starting out, you should experiment or with different things to kind of see, again, what works for you. If you feel like maybe outlining is better, or again, just sitting down and going from scratch. But yeah, I've found that if you sort of just let go, like, I guess, let go and let God, in terms of knowing that your first draft is just going to suck and there's nothing you can do about it, and that's okay, then that lets that eases the pressure a little bit, because I mean, even again, I mean, I would love for my first draft to be perfect. So when I'm done and I send it to my agent or I have other people look it over, it's like, you know, we don't have to do anything. Because even when I go through then a manuscript, and I'll go, I mean, I just actually finished the first draft of a book the other night. And again, I'm doing copy edits now for another book, so I'm going to let it sit for, you know, probably a week or two, which, quite honestly, I would love to write a first draft and let it sit for a couple months before I would come back to it so I could be really fresh. But, you know, realistically, that's not going to happen. But when I do go back through it, you know, I'm going to go back through it. It's going to be cleaning it up. And then before I even send it to anybody else, I'll probably put it on my Kindle and I'll read it from that point of view. You know, as like a reader, And then I'll make, you know, changes there. And by the time I go to, you know, my agent, there's still going to be things that she'll probably come back with, notes and edits. And I'll look at it and be like, oh, yeah, okay, of course, that makes sense. And I always thought that, I think there was a Walter Mosley had said something along the lines of how, you know, he'll always be just like working on a book. He'll always be just rewriting it, revising it, rewriting it, revising it. And then when he gets to a place where he can't rewrite or revise it anymore, then it's done. And that's kind of like how it comes here. Of course, then if you're ever on, you know, deadline, usually it's done whenever the deadline is due and you have to turn it in and then it goes to the press and it's kind of like, and then it's really out of your hands.
Well, you've mentioned several times a question I sometimes ask. You mentioned the readers. How much do you consider the reader as you're writing?
A little bit more than I probably did in the past. There had been times where one of my early books, and the book that's published now has changed, but when I got my first agent right out of college, I had written this one thriller, and I wanted to go against the grain, which is so dumb. But basically, I had this setup where, and it was actually very similar to The Killing Room. And basically this guy, he lives in California, or I'm sorry, he lives in Pennsylvania with his wife and daughter. And then he goes to bed one night, and then in the next night he wakes up in California. And his wife and daughter have been taken, and he needs to basically kind of get them back. And what happened was, at the end of the book, he gets there too late, and his wife and daughter are dead. And I thought, like, okay, this is good. You know, I mean, like, you know, there's always these happy endings or these, you know, like, I want to go against that. And my agent at the time, to his credit, did shop it around that way. But I remember we had gotten feedback from one editor and a publisher. And again, it was the story of my life. The editor supposedly loved the book, but just didn't think it was right for that house. But she had told him, like, you can't kill off the wife and the daughter. The reader's going to kill you. You know, they're going to go through this entire book, and then they get to the end, and it's going to be this huge downer. And I mean, again, at the time, I just was like, you know, I don't know what I was thinking. It was one of those things that nowadays, you know, people, they're reading to escape. They're reading to get away from, you know, crappy life. And so to then just, you know, compound that and just add on top of that, it's not fair. It's not right. I don't know. It's just readers want to be entertained. They're reading because they want to, you know, to get away. And so I do want to make sure that whatever I'm doing is going to be entertaining. And you know, every writer is going to say that. It's really hard to say, because at the same time, when I'm in, like, when I'm in the midst of it, when I'm really, you know, deep into a draft, I'm mostly just trying to entertain myself. I'm just trying to, like, you know, is this a book that I would not skim? Is this a book where, you know, I would definitely enjoy it? But I guess in the back of my head, I am still having, you know, the reader in mind, because I definitely want to have them. I don't want to waste their time. I mean, that's what it really comes down to, whether or not they listen to the book, you know, as an audiobook. You know, I don't want to waste those hours, or if they're sitting down on a Kindle or a paperback, hardcover, whatever. Like, you know, they are taking time out of their day. You know, they worked, you know, they worked a whole day at work. You know, maybe they were dealing with kids or whatever. And, you know, and especially nowadays, it's not like in the old days where there wasn't tablets and smartphones and video games. I mean, people, all they really had to do was what? Just read a book or listen to the radio. but now there's fewer and fewer people reading. So it's really just, if people are going to take that time and read my book or listen to my book, like, I want to make sure it's worth it to them. I want to make sure that they come away glad that they spent those several hours of their life, basically dedicating it to reading one of my stuff. So I definitely always have that in the back of my head. Absolutely. I definitely want to make sure that it pays off for them. And I like to think that for the most part it does. Every once in a while, you know, you look at some Amazon reviews, you know, well, you'll say it's always the worst thing that they've ever read, which I always find impressive. I mean, if I've truly written something that is the worst thing you've ever read, you know what? It's what I find funny about it is it's always concerning to me if someone reads something and they are completely indifferent, where just it means nothing to them. But if I've you know, if they read one of my books and for whatever reason they have that emotional response that it makes them angry. For whatever reason, I mean, I really hope it doesn't, but for whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like something in there was done somewhat effectively, I guess, to, like, at least get that emotional response from them.
Oh, totally. It makes my nipples hard when I do that. There's nothing more exciting than upsetting someone. The emotion is usually the person that's writing it anyway. Like, when they're writing a terrible review, it's something they're going through that they relate to how you wrote something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. I mean, there might be something in there where, you know, it's a trigger for them. They, you know, maybe they had a bad day. Like, had they read that a month prior, for whatever reason, they may have had, you know, a completely different view on things. So
before they found their wife in the bathtub, it might have been better.
That is that, you know, you always have to take that into consideration. Absolutely.
So, and speaking of triggers, do you think about the violence or the you know, the action or maybe even the sex, how you write that on the page, how you write characters in their aggression when you do a book?
So I will say a lot of my earlier stuff, I probably was going a little bit more for shock value, where I really, Yes, my stuff will be violent at times. It will have a lot of action, but at the same time, I like to keep the violence off the page if possible. I guess it really depends on the book. I mean, if I'm writing psychological suspense stuff, oftentimes that violence is always going to be off the page. You know, we know that there is a dead body, but we don't really know what's happened to the dead body. It's always that mystery of what's going on. And in terms of like the Killing Room, yes, there is a lot of action in it. In fact, you know, just as a plug, Bestseller Books called it one of the most exhilarating action thrillers you're going to read, which thank you to them. That was very kind of them. But, you know, so there is a lot of action in the book. But in terms of the violence, there are, and again, there may be violent scenes, but there are times where I've just found, and maybe just in my, you know, old age here in my 40s, where I always want to kind of pull back, because you've always find that you want to trust the reader, that you don't want to have like spoon feed them everything, where, and again, it kind of goes back to that balancing act where you want to give them just enough so that their imagination can fill in the gaps, but you don't give them too much. Cause I'm sure you guys have read books where it's like, okay, we get it. You know, you've spent two pages, you know, telling us this one thing. It's like, okay, enough already. So again, it's always finding that that balancing act.
Do you do, what kind of research do you do to kind of fill in the blanks of how detectives act or how police act or what goes on in the scenes around your characters?
Well, I hate research. I don't know about you guys, but it's something that I don't like to do, but it's a necessary evil. Oftentimes I will try not to have the research dictate what's happening in the story. It's one of those things where I will write it and then I will go back to double check, does this work? And if it doesn't, then I have to fix it then, which is very, it is probably not the best way about going about it. You know, Google is definitely my friend. I oftentimes will, do Google. I mean, well, so for this type of books too, you know, and I'm sure you guys have encountered this. If you include any type of weapon, the firearm, I should say, but any type of weapon, you better make sure you know what you're talking about. You know, like what caliber the rifle is, the pistol is, what type of ammunition, how many rounds is in a mag? I mean, like. Because I talked before about some readers who will get angry about things like you'll definitely hear about it if you screw up anything in terms of that. So that is one of those things that I definitely make sure I do my research on. And it's the same thing too. Like, with The Killing Room, it takes place in Vegas. It's been several years since I had been to Vegas, but, going back to Google Street View is amazing nowadays. I mean, you can go anywhere in the world, practically anywhere in the world, and see what's there. I mean, I think I had set up a book somewhere. Where was it? It was in some other country. I think it was in France. Like, I could use Street View to really just say, like, okay, as they were going down this highway, like something that was off, you know, that could be seen in the background. Or so, like, it's one of those things that it's always amazed me when you have some of these writers who will be like, oh, you know, I traveled for 3 months doing research for this book. And it's great. If I had the time and money, I'm sure I would do it too. But, you know, I'm a little bit limited on what I'm able to get away with. So oftentimes I do have to rely again on Google and Google Street Views and even YouTube. I mean, oftentimes, you know, people will just film. Okay, so the second book, there is some of it takes place in Los Angeles and some of it takes place in a sports stadium. I don't want to say which one to give it completely give everything away. But I was watching some YouTube videos of people who were, you know, basically giving tours around the entire stadium to really try to kind of, again, make it as real as possible for when those characters are there.
Yeah, it adds a touch, you know, on this, you know, it makes it better, I think. So, listen, so you've got book two coming out in the, what, late fall, or when will book two?
It is scheduled for August.
Okay. And so how do you like the publishing business now? How's it going?
It really depends on the time of day, I think. You know, if I have an email coming in from something, I mean, it's, It was so, again, so a lot of my stuff. So I mentioned before about having the, about having my very first agent, like right out of college. Like I had gone through just writing books and shopping it around and not selling them. And I found that, you know, in terms of publishing, oftentimes good books just get, passed over for one reason or another. In fact, there was actually, an author, you both are probably aware of, who is very well known in his genre. But he had two books that came out. His very first novel and his second book came out from a publisher. Publisher did not really do any type of promotion. The books did not sell at all. And then he went and wrote a different type of novel, shopped it around, had a lot of interest from editors. His agent thought at the time, okay, great, we're going to have an auction here. Ultimately, no one put in any offers because of, again, the track record from his first two books. Fortunately, on a second round of submissions, one editor, because sometimes it when it comes down to it, it only really takes one editor really pushed to have that book. It became a breakout for him, and now he is, and again, in his genre, very, very well known. He won a lot of awards. You know, he's had a big movie made into one of his books. I mean, and then so it's just that's just the thing about the publishing. Like, had that one editor not made an offer, and ultimately no one. I mean, who knows what would have happened with his career? And you know, he's a great writer. He's written a lot of great books. But again, it's a very fickle and frustrating business. But again, it is the business. And even with self-publishing, you know, so some of my stuff I do with self-publishing, and you know, there is that freedom there. But at the same time, it's just really getting your books out there, getting them, basically making readers aware the book exists. I mean, that's always the biggest challenge. And it's the same thing for any type of, arts. I mean, you know, if you're a painter, if you're a musician, if you're an actor, it's just getting people to just be aware that you even exist. And then when they do, hopefully they take the time to see your movie, listen to your music, read your book, and they like it. And hopefully, you know, seek you out to read or, you know, see more, listen.
Come see me dance more. Or whatever, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, dancing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sometimes I, you know, I just don't get the crowd. You know, social media, website, hookup apps. Like, where do people find Robert? Like, where are your readers going to find you?
So I used to love Twitter, and I still call it Twitter. Probably not as active on there as much as I had been before, although I still, you know, I can't give it up for whatever reason, even though what the site's become. So I'm there. But Instagram, Facebook, you know, there's my website, robertsportman.com. I have a newsletter where I also specifically wrote for one of my series on the Female Assassin series, and I wrote a short story that is exclusive for newsletter subscribers. So if people sign up for the newsletter, they get an exclusive ebook short story that is not available anywhere else. So those are probably the best places to find me.
Female Assassin. So is that kind of your alter ego?
No, that came about because my wife, for my first couple of books, had just made a comment where she's like, you know, like a lot of like all your main characters are always men. And I was like, yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm a guy. that usually how, you know, is kind of how it went. But and for whatever reason, I had this idea about, you know, doing this Female Assassin series. And again, readers who have read it seem to really dig it, and it's one of those series too that I have a lot more ideas for future books. Again, it's just time is precious, and then what happens is, you know, fortunately I've been able to, you know, be under contract for different projects, so those have to take precedent. But I definitely want to get back into them. I really like them. I mean, they're just, you know, just pure just action and just a straight up thriller. So that's always fun to do. But and I guess that's a question too. I mean, because again, under my pen name, you know, I write more. The main characters are more, you know, female led. You know, oftentimes they're female protagonists. And going back to one of your previous questions, like when I'm writing those types of books, I don't. It's not like there's like a, at least that I'm not aware of. There's not a switch that like I, you know, manually have to flick to like get into that headspace. I just get into that headspace. I mean, even the same thing too, even in The Killing Room and in the follow-up, I mean, there, you know, I will have some secondary characters from a female point of view, and I don't know, I just am able to just kind of seamlessly kind of get into that mind space. I don't know why. I don't know if it's just because, you know, as much reading as I do or what it is, but, and I know that some, you know, readers, or I'm sorry, some writers might struggle to, you know, find themselves writing from one point of view or other. And just, I think it just comes from, like, I've just been doing it so long that it just, you know, so much that I practice. Again, it's just the idea of just writing. You know, I hate to use the analogy, but it is kind of like riding a bike or like, you know, like running for a marathon. Just, you have to practice. You have to just keep doing it. You have to build up to doing it. In fact, it's, there are times where I, again, you know, writing's not fun. At least for me, it is work. And there are times where I just kind of feel like I just don't have it in me. I just don't think I can do this. But I'll sit down and be like, oh, you know what? I'll write maybe a couple paragraphs. And then next thing I know, I've written like, you know, 2,000 words, or I've written a chapter. It's just really just kind of like pushing yourself, because it is work. It is. I mean, especially if you, you know, want to make a career out of it. I mean, it is. You have to. Again, it goes. Yeah, it's like a 9-to-5. I mean, you have to. You have to put in the time. You have to put in the hours, and you have to. Yeah, you have to treat it like a job.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's a discipline. You have to keep it going, you know. Very few are lucky enough to just be able to write and be a star and be able to do it like Joel.
Yes, of course. I'm so well known and so successful. I just think it and it ends up on the page. Not quite. In fact, just before we came on the air, I was just starting to make out a few pair of chapters, and I'm now sentences. I'm in that point that just talked to Bart Greene. It's like, I'm in the, as I call it, barf draft. I'm in the barfy part of the barf draft. It's just, you know, the first 2,000, 20,000 words. Yeah, great idea. That's like, oh man, what was I thinking? Where am I going? Somebody help me. And hoping to get to that point where it finishes off. You know, gotta sit down.
Well, for me, I always get worried if I'm working on something and I feel very confident about it. I always feel like if I'm at a place where I'm thinking like, oh God, this is awful. I don't think I was going to read that. And then later when I go back through it and be like, okay, yeah, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Like, I don't know. It's just that a constant self doubt. Of course there are times when, you know, at the same time, then it just might also be awful too, but,
thanks.
But, cause I think that's important too, where you can, you know, kind of recognize that you're wasting your time or that you're not,
He's trying to let you down easy,
you know,
Joe.
You know when to stop.
I know exactly what he's saying.
Yeah, he's giving it to you subtly. You know, there's time. Anyway, well, it's been a great conversation. We're glad you came on. And, of course, everyone, go out and get his book.
Absolutely. Thank you both for having me on.
The Killing Room.
Got some notes.
Yeah, got lots of notes. Now Joe's going to be...
I'm stealing. Well, the pen name thing is that I hadn't really thought about it that deeply. And a few other things you said, I got underlined and circled here. So
yeah,
I'm changing. So.
Yeah, there you go. See, we know where we're going. Robert Swartwood, thank you for being here.
Thank you again, guys.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.